introduce Solomon.
Oh, right.
This is Solomon, and he is Sister Sage's cousin. What's that? He's a good family friend of Sister Sage and Abenazer, and he came for Abenazer's state cross-country meet yesterday, where Abenazer finished 26th out of about 250 runners. Unfortunately, the medals only went to the first 25. So Malachi said he was going to make a medal.
There you go.
Medal.
And it'll be more special to have that.
So you guys are first cousins once removed. Sorry, Emery.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
No wonder why it's so.
Moment, Timothy and Joanna, they are preparing to meet at the school to leave for Peru, first for the airport, coming to Peru, with the senior class, so I know they are busy at home, probably making last minute packing things happen, and then, they'll be gone the next two Sundays, so just keep them in good spirits in the class, and Mark will be joining them at the airport. To join the class as well. So I'll go ahead and start us off in prayer and then we'll jump into the material. Father, I thank you for this day and I thank you for this time together that we have each week. We do think of the LCCS students and teachers and anyone else connected with that trip who will be participating in it. I pray that you just give them all peace of mind and just calmness of heart, as a lot of them I know are a little anxious about just the travel and the trip and everything, and I just pray that everything would fall into place very quickly and smoothly, and that it would just be a life-changing opportunity for them. And we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Appropriately, the chapter that we're going to talk about is service, which is kind of neat with the idea of us sending off some of our own today. But I was not in here last week because I was in nursery, and I know Timothy covered the chapter on character. Was there anything he did kind of fill me in, but I think he wrapped that chapter up. Did that sound right when you guys?
Yeah.
It seemed as though he said he wrapped it up. There's a couple, with each chapter, there's some activities we could do. There's one that we're not going to get into, but I believe the main thrust of the discussion last week was that life congruence, just about making sure that your faith and your character line up. And there's this one activity, it's called Morals a la Carte, which I think that might have been one of the slides that you looked at. And we go through it with the students. We're not going to take the time because it actually is pretty lengthy. But what it does, I think I actually have a copy here. It goes through, let me see here, five areas of life. One of them is school and homework, so that doesn't quite apply. Area number two was work. Area number three is media. Area number four is relationships. And then area number five is faith. And for each one, I can actually just pull it up. For each one, there's a chart, and it gives different scenarios. And like, say, the first one, when struggling with a question on a test, I rarely try to see someone else's answer. And then on the other extreme, I frequently try to see someone else's answer. And then there's numbers 1 through 5. So what we had the students do is they went through each of these scenarios, and there's over 100 of them, I think. No, that's wrong. Not, my math was very bad there. Not quite that many, but when working, the homework, like I said, the homework and schoolwork may not apply as much, but like when working a job with required hours, I usually show up on time, or I frequently show up late. Now, I know as a teacher, we're supposed to be there at 7:30, boring. Does that happen all the time? Not this. Probably not. We're technically supposed to stay till 3:30. Does that happen all the time? Probably not. You can kind of, Aaron always, it's good he doesn't have windows in his office. He has a skylight, but he's kind of tucked in this office and because he's the one who would always see like, hey, I just saw so-and-so and they were heading to their car and it's 3:05. If they're leaving, I can leave, you know? And so sometimes you're sitting there working and you see cars, you're like, oh, well, they're leaving. You know, I guess, and it's not to get all legalistic about these things, but it is a helpful activity just to kind of ask yourself in some of these areas. Like, even though we know we believe a certain way, do we sometimes find the gray areas a little more easily than perhaps we should? One example that I can think of this week, we got a puppy, and it's a mini golden doodle. I love it, but I hate it. he's cute. His name's Copper. I'm sure you'll see him as something. And he's a puppy. We were at Aubrey's with Grace yesterday, and we couldn't walk anywhere, which I hadn't really thought this through. But between pushing the stroller and then having this dog on a leash, and then half the time Asher had the dog on the leash, so the combination of a 4-year-old holding a puppy and it just felt like we were celebrities. But this woman stopped us and she was talking about the dog, and then she noticed the stroller. She's like, oh my word, and you have a baby back here. And she starts looking at Anna and interacting with her, and she's like, and wait, she's like, and you have a 4-year-old? She's like, are you guys insane? And I was like, well, believe it or not, we come from a much more insane family than what you're seeing right here. But for her. And so anyway, it is a little insane right now. And one thing happened that early on, the first day we had this new leash, and we went to PetSmart and broke the bank there because no idea how expensive a dog is. And we got this really nice leash, and at some point Asher thought it would be fun to try and like hang the leash up, but not by the handlebar. It's one of those retractable ones. So he, I don't even know how he did this, but we've been watching the dog so much that our children, especially Asher, he's getting away with a lot right now. And he took the leash and he strung it through our refrigerator door handle, and then he just like pulled it down tight, which I would think would be normal. So I went to try and remove it to walk the dog, and I can't get this thing out. And because our door handle, it like gradually comes in. And so I was like, Aaron, I said, you gotta get this dog leash out. It's probably good he's not here yet, because I'm kind of throwing him under the bus. But I was like, you gotta get this dog, because the dog's gonna get in the bathroom and I don't wanna deal with it. Now we could have just taken the puppy out, but I don't like chasing the puppy around our yard. So so I went upstairs and Aaron's working on this. And I come downstairs, and he's holding two ends of the leash. And here he had severed it in the process. And I was like, are you kidding me? And he's like, I don't know what happened. And I was like, we could have just removed the refrigerator handle. There's a few screws to do that. And he's like, yeah, I really wish we had thought of that 5 minutes ago. So he's like, I was already running out to the school for some parent-teacher conferences on Friday. And he's like, can you just take it and return it? And I'm like, and say what? Like, what are you going to say to them? He's like, well, it's on. And there's like a 2-year warranty. And I start reading the fine print, and it says like any mishandling of the leash or dog training is not covered in the warranty. And I was like, I don't know what to say to them. And he's like, just... I should not be telling this story. It's really good. He's like, just tell them it was frayed when we got it, and we just noticed, and it just got worse. And I was like, that's a no. I would sooner walk in and say, our 4-year-old did this. We just got it. Is there any, and I would kind of take that nice route of pity, like have pity on us.
Yes, yeah. Grace, please.
And he's like, no. He's like, they will never take it for that. I said, well, no, I'm not going. And we had this fight about it. And he's like, why will you not just go and say this? And he's like, it's not completely a lie. Yeah, it kind of is. And he's like, fine, if you can, I'll do it. And I'm like, fine, it's not, shame on you. Now, in reality, internally, I wanted a new leash. And I was kind of grateful he was going to do what it took to get a new leash. But I didn't want to have to do it. And that's a little bit of the, like, that people pleaser in me as well. I mean, I don't want to paint myself as like this, you know, moral pillar who just can't bring myself to do it. But in that particular case, I'm the one who's worried that they're going to see through my lie and I'm just going to start laughing and it's just all going to go downhill. But I was thinking about this and it's like those tiny little things that in the course of our day, in the course of life, that we kind of are like, all right, I can do that, or I don't have to include that information. I mean, it's just interesting. Sometimes it's a little convicting when we actually stop and take a look at these things. And so I don't think my husband was convicted. We did get a new leash to finish the story. We stopped by on the way out yesterday to the track meet, or to the cross-country meet, and Aaron said he walked in and he just started, and the guy is just like, it's fine. He's like, just go grab one. So they didn't seem to care. It really looked like the dog had chewed it, which is also not covered under warranty. So ironically, at the meet, it got caught under the bleacher legs, and Aaron finally removes it, and it's already frayed again. It's not ripped, it's just got some fraying. So I don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, so we have a dog. And he's changing life in ways that I'm not really excited about. But we'll get there, I hope.
Look out for your carpet. Sorry.
That's why, I know. That's why Aaron's late today. We couldn't both get here on time. We haven't quite adapted yet. But anyway, that kind of just concludes, you know, this idea. We're not going to obviously go through this whole activity, but just something to be mindful of as we go through our day and our week and the different areas of life that we're in, whether it be work or home or, whatever it is, just to, those things that we might do without thinking twice about it sometimes, just think twice and be like, okay, is this really lining up with what I am thinking or what I believe and what I say I believe? And, there might be some areas where you're a little more like, maybe I shouldn't do that, or maybe I shouldn't say that. But anyway, so that's the issue of character. We're going to move into service, and with the model on the front there, the foundational values, on the very front of your note, you'll see we're about to round out this a few chapters on foundational values. We talked about faith, we talked about character, and now we're going to talk about service. And I'll show the video to kind of introduce it, and then we'll see how all three of these things build on each other to kind of build this foundational values piece. Let me go ahead. We will join Dr. Millard for Life on the Beach. Here we go.
If you're filming a series with the title Life Calling on the Beach, and that beach is on an island, it seems like one of the episodes should be about boats. And this is that episode. When you live on an island beach, you're going to have boats all around you. It's just an island's way of life. And Oak Island is no different. We're getting ready to look at service, the third foundational value. And I want to use boats to illustrate this. And I'm going to personify the boats. Stay with me. I think you'll see what I mean. Oak Island does not exist in isolation. We are connected across the Intracoastal Waterway with our sister town, Southport. Southport's protected harbor provides a safe haven for a wide variety of boats. It's fascinating to see how many different types of boats there are. But they all have one thing in common. They all float. There's another thing that they have in common as well. None of them exist to serve themselves. They all serve people in a variety of ways. Let's start exploring the waters and see how many different kinds of boats we can observe and just exactly what it is they do. A big ship like this serves people and towns all over the world by delivering hundreds of containers filled with needed goods. The problem is it's so big, this one's 1,000 feet long, that it has a hard time maneuvering through tight channels like the one here in Southport going by Oak Island. So it has to use a tugboat to help it make it through. Tugboats then serve to help the bigger boat. In fact, tugboats may be the best example of boats in service that we have. Their entire life purpose is to help other boats reach their life purpose. Fishing boats like this one make it possible to catch fish for people to eat that would not be possible from the shore or the beach or a pier. Sailboats provide recreation for people. Helping someone else enjoy recreation can be an important act of service. Here we see a smaller boat helping a person zip quickly into and out of tighter areas in a harbor. Like sailboats, jet skis provide recreation to people, but it's a different type of recreation. It has excitement and makes it possible for individuals to have closer contact with the water. Kayaks are portable and enable a person to explore the waters at a slower pace. Barges make it possible to deliver goods and equipment to an island that enable the island to carry out functions that otherwise would be restricted to towns that are only on the mainland. A tanker like this one delivers fuel that people need to keep their enterprises going. Pilot boats provide leadership to larger ships by delivering skilled pilots to those ships. Ferries serve in a very unique and valuable way. Ferries like the one we're on carry people and cars from one place to another where roads can't take them. Coast Guard ships are a great example of service. They protect oceans, beaches, and other waterways, and they provide help to boats and people in peril. This boat gave up serving others and is now trapped in a state of deterioration with no meaning. It's a good illustration of people who refuse to live a life of service. They'll find themselves trapped in their search for a life calling. And their purpose quite likely will look like this boat. A foundational value of boats is to provide some sort of service to those who use them. And this brings us to the third element of the foundational values component of life calling, service. Our life calling is not in isolation. It is in connection to others. Just like all those boats we have seen, we exist to serve others to whom we are connected. If we don't do this, we will likely never discover our true life calling.
There's a statement that says, a life calling cannot be discovered or pursued in isolation from other people. And then a similar one, we cannot find purpose in our lives when we try to exist in isolation. So even before here, we realize that our life of character is meant to be lived out and commitment of service to others. We define this as life connection. But this idea of life calling and service, any thoughts on that, even before we get into the material?
Read it one more time.
Sorry, I just closed it. Well, it, the main gist of it was we cannot discover our life calling in isolation of other people. That was kind of the main idea.
We need encouragement from others. Right here, like in adult Bible study.
I've often thought how, you know, the God of the Bible is often referred to as the God of love. You know, he is love. And, you know, Paul, I think it's Paul that writes about how, you know, you can be, do all these great things, but without love, you're just a resounding gong. It's empty, you know. You know, so the fruits of the Spirit are all kind of summed up in love, you know. And if you literally are living all alone, how then can you give? You know, if you're living with no, you keep everybody out of your life, even if you're living among people, but you don't let anybody in, how then can you truly give or receive love? You know.
In the stress management work that I do, we tell the people there's a difference between isolation and solitude. So there are moments of being alone that are valuable, but they need to be moments, not a style of life. Isolation is destructive. It's when somebody separates themselves from someone else because they went through a traumatic experience. And that's devastating. It leads to suicide and depression and dysfunction of all kinds in people's lives. And when we do this stress management, we almost always do it in groups.
Well, and talks about one body being many parts, so we can't be one body, many parts of one.
A lot of times you might be having a conversation with somebody, or I've had some of these conversations where, especially with students, they're just really kind of struggling to, you know, what should I major in, where should I go to college, or trying to figure out the next step. And they're definitely at a time in life where there's a lot of pressure on those decisions, and they feel like they need to have it all figured out. It's usually the first thing we talk about is how we don't need to have that figured out. But kind of a backdoor approach to that conversation that I think is helpful is in many ways like this idea of finding our life calling, this one thing that we think we're supposed to do, that becomes a very inwardly focused endeavor. You know what I mean? We become, okay, well then what are my strengths? What are the things that I like? What are the things that I'm passionate about? And we're going to talk about those things, and that's certainly a part of it. But what I love about this chapter is it's just kind of raising your sights and like, no, oftentimes, more often than not, direction in our life in terms of calling and fulfilling what we feel like God has best equipped us for, oftentimes it's by not looking at ourselves. It's by looking out at others. It's by kind of dying to self and by serving others. And in that effort, a lot of times is where we kind of stumble upon our life calling. It's so interesting, like if you were to, and maybe we'll have a chance to do this, but if we were to go around the room and talk about, like if we were gonna try and describe what we feel is our life calling or what we feel most at home doing, or why we chose the, you know, career path or the life path that we're on, my guess is the majority of you have somehow stumbled upon it. Versus, I came out of high school knowing exactly what I was going to major in. I came out knowing exactly what I was going to, where I was going to work. I came out knowing exactly the type of life I was going to lead. I mean, that just doesn't usually happen. Oftentimes, we kind of just get moving, and as we get moving, and then as we'll see here, as we get serving, usually we kind of stumble upon it. Like, wow. This really gets me excited. This is something I'm passionate about. This is something that I feel like there's purpose in what I'm doing, and God's using me, and I'm helping others. And I think that's just really neat because it kind of takes some of the pressure off. But anyway, that's, as we go into this discussion here, we'll come back and have more conversation about it. But I don't think we need to cover that by the end of. We're going we're gonna see a little bit about how service is key to our life calling. Does somebody, this is a long one, does somebody want to read this for all? Jonathan, you do that, since you're close enough, probably. Really? Do you need classes?
Matthew 25:34-38. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me."
There's actually three passages. I'm just going to just do all three real quick, and then we'll talk about them. Ron, go ahead.
Sorry. 4:10. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms.
And then the last one. Anybody want to... Short one as well. Lori, sure, go ahead.
Sure. James 2:14. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if people claim to have faith but have no deeds? Can such faith save them?
We could discuss these, but I think they all kind of point to the same thing. Just this idea that our faith and service should really be something that go hand in hand. I know that. You know, here in James talks about how faith without works is dead, and just this idea that, you know, with the first passage, whatever we're doing for the least of these, or whatever we're doing for our neighbor, whatever we're doing for, you know, those around us, that's we sometimes can lose sight of the fact that that's really what we're, as our offering to God in many ways. And, you know, the other thing I think about on the flip side of that one passage is the verse where, you know, Jesus says, "Away from me, I never knew you." You know, where it's the flip, where people are like, "Oh, but we did this, this, and this, and this." And he's like, "Away from me, I never knew you." Like, so it's important that it's linked with our faith and not just doing these religious deeds for the sake of doing them, but really out of a true heart of service. So... just reviewing here, I know you've seen this many times, and we will, each chapter kind of starts out with a review of this, but issues of faith and character lead to the questions of how then will we relate toward others in response to our faith and character. The progression, let's get it all up here, is that our faith should lead to moral and ethical behavior. So that's where you have the character block. Our faith should really be the foundation that then leads to our own moral, ethical behavior, character, and then as a result of that, it should lead to an outward focus of service.
And you know, well, yeah. You didn't say this, Anne-Marie, but there's a quote I heard in seminary. It's one I, for some reason, I remember now, I forget it, but... it's important that all of those are in place.
Yes.
Right. There was a guy, it was actually a minister's insurance company, he gave us a dinner, and they had a Philadelphia pastor named Aaron Gast speak. And the quote just hit me so hard, I've never forgotten it. He said, do not seek to do the work of God until you know the God who works. Mm-hmm. And so that faith, you know, is a foundation. Yeah. I'm sure you were going to say that.
No, well, not as well as you. But no, it's true. And that, you know, that's why there is like a... I'm sorry, I'm walking around here. There is a progression to this. There is an order. That's why we don't start here. We don't just randomly, you know, tackle character one, but you start with the faith. And then that should build in us a character that reflects morality and ethics. And then that should lead to, it says in the book here, compassionate servanthood and a service to others. So we're going to talk a little bit about this last piece here. Universal call to everyone to serve others. All right, so service describes life connection, my attitude about others. Service starts with my capacity to respect others. In a spirit of community, service is fully realized when I actually take actions of character that are carried out with a sense of concern and responsibility for others. I'm going to break this down. Looking at these five things: respect, community, concern, responsibility, and action. Kind of taking this larger idea of servanthood and talking about these little components that make that up. So for respect, this idea that you honor rather than demean. We're going to talk a little later how sometimes our service is very much based on ourselves, because it's like something irritates us. Something bothers us. We don't like how that person is, or we don't like that problem because it somehow inconveniences us. So we're going to serve to try and fix that. And they were saying that that's really not what servanthood is about. That's more taking my agenda, putting that on someone else or something else, and then for my own convenience, wanting to remedy a situation. And saying that really, at the very beginning, there has to be a respect. There has to be a choosing to honor. I remember one of the best talks I heard. It was at a ACSI Youth Leadership Conference, and it was talking about how so much of our mission is the idea of restoring dignity should be such a driving force behind what we do. And so whether you're on the mission field or wherever you are, especially, it was talking about in the context of going to places where dignity has been lost, that we're not going in to fix and correct, but rather to restore dignity to a person. And that there's just such an important point of emphasis there that often gets overlooked. So respect is key to our service. Community, this is like what Melanie was just saying. I am a part, not a part. So we definitely wanna be plugged in. I know the book has all these really great quotes about this, but a life calling, this is where that one came up, cannot be discovered or pursued in isolation from other people. Those who pursue life calling by focusing almost entirely on self-help and personal development will never really find a true life calling that enables them to live their lives in the power of purpose. So this idea that being plugged into community is so much a part of it. Concern. I see the people and their need, not the dirt. And this connects a little bit to what I was saying. One of the quotes in here, it says, we need to be careful, however, that the concerns that rise within us are truly fulfilling a need of those we serve rather than just addressing problems that bother us. So is there a true, genuine concern? This then responsibility. I am the me, as you can see, in somebody. And somebody will take care of it. And I'm guilty of this. I don't know about you guys, but I think a lot of times we see the things around us. We see the areas of need, but it's very easy to be like, oh, well, somebody else is more gifted in that area. Or somebody else really likes to work in that way. Or somebody else will take care of it. And it's not even in like a passive up sort of way. It's not even like in a laziness. It's just more sometimes we just don't feel like we're adequate. And we think that, well, there are definitely others who are better equipped to do this than I am. And a lot of times with servanthood, there has to be a sense of responsibility that falls in place. And that becomes anchored in us. And so that we realize, no, somebody else is not going to do this. I'm going to do this. And even if somebody else could do this, I'm still going to do this. And I think that's important. I know that's definitely an area where I need to grow often. And then action, I move beyond feelings to acting. I remember in other parts of this book, it talks about how there are so many things that we feel or that we feel compelled by that get stopped at this point, where we just don't take the action steps to do something. This kind of gets into more of a college thing because of the audience that this is primarily for. But I know this came up earlier, this idea of general education. Students a lot of times are just thinking, what's the point of my gen eds? I want to get into my major. But this idea of civic engagement in general education, specifically within education itself, tend to be areas that kind of help promote this within an individual. So that's what this is referring to. So if this is true, the universal call to everyone to serve others, then this is true. Life calling cannot be discovered if we are unwilling to serve others. Any thoughts on that? I mean, I know we kind of talked about it a little bit, but yeah.
Maybe not on that statement per se, but the whole concept here. I think we run the risk, and I'll say me too, mm-hmm. of making it a Western cultural derivative rather than a Christian derivative, because with immigrant ministries, Western models don't hold for them. So there needs to be that sensitivity to the culture underlying the individual, and look to where you can serve in these areas without offending or pushing the wrong way in a cultural aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. Incredibly important point. I mean, I know if Mark was here, he would talk about their cultural training that they and how that was, I think, what he would say the most valuable thing that they have experienced in their mission training was just the importance of understanding culture. Yeah, for sure.
And so, I mean, we don't have training like that, but it's kind of where you start with your service. If you start from a point of yourself, like, what can I bring, you know, what are my gifts, you know, what do I have to impart here, you know, that's going to be missing what Ron's talking about, which is, you know, what does the person I'm serving or the group I'm serving or the whatever it is, what do they need, like, what, you know, it's a different starting point. It's just a different focus or perspective. You know, it's very significant. It really is. It significantly affects what our service looks like then, and if it's actually helping or not helping.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of times we do it, like what Ron was saying with the Western culture, we do it by default. You know, like a lot of we kind of clumsily do it without knowing, because it's just how we're wired, it's what we're used to. And so if we're not purposeful to step out of that, I think by default we all will probably naturally to some degree go in that direction. So if you're not thinking about it, you're probably doing it. You know, the bad side of that. Because I think we have to intentionally think about it. Unless you obviously are, you know, we've had a lot of interfacing with people and, you know, doing incredible missionary work. We have the Shannons coming to church and speaking, and obviously Mark and Kristen. And, you know, they have a life now where that's their life. Their default has changed, you know. And that's amazing, and that's something so valuable, and that doesn't mean that we can't walk this out in a similar way, just perhaps in a different setting.
Even bringing it close to home, I think, and I'm in a serving profession. That's what I do for a living, and I have to remember, for example, if I'm going to visit someone who's sick, that I'm there because they're sick, not because I'm a pastor. You know, there can be a selfish motivation to doing good works. We don't help somebody because we're getting notches of good deeds in our belt, or because we're obligated, or out of guilt, or whatever. There really needs to be a truly selfless desire to serve, and it doesn't call attention to what you're doing. You just do it because it's your character, back to what you were saying.
It's the difference of asking the question when going into a situation, what can I offer, what do I have to offer, versus what do they need? And there's nothing wrong with that question, what do I have to offer? It's just sometimes it so limits us, and it kind of blinds us a little bit. And so, yeah, just coming into a situation, and what is the need? And then I think what's exciting is God will very often push us into things that we would never have thought we could do, that we wouldn't have necessarily volunteered for and said, oh, I'm really great at this, I'll do that. But rather, we find by God's grace and power, it's like, wow, he actually worked through me in that way, in that situation, and I never would have thought that possible. And then you see, you know, God work in someone else's life as a result of that, and you know, you come back to the beginning point, and you know, okay, that was not me, because that is not where my strength lies. That's not where I, you know, think that I'm gifted. And it is. It's just kind of a subtle paradigm shift at the start of all that. That's exciting.
I think counting is one of the dangers, you know. Like
counting.
Yeah, like when I first came here over 4 decades ago, the tradition of this church was that every month to the board, I reported how many hospital visits, how many counseling sessions, you know, and there's a temptation to go out and fill your quota, you know. It's like the police officer who gives me a ticket, not because he really, because he's just filling his quota, not because I was going that fast. Well, I don't know where I got that much
right.
Later, but just in case. But you know, I mean, and the other thing is, I think we can do that in the church. You know, we can count numbers of people who came that day, and how much you want people to grow, but it needs to be for the right reason, not because we're trying to be bigger than the next church down the street. I don't know, it's a subtle thing.
Yeah.
But I struggle with this all the time. I have to be careful that I'm not keeping track because of myself,
mm-hmm.
even in my own mind, or going somewhere because it's my duty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real struggle that's always there. And I think it's true for people who aren't pastors. Just anytime we help a neighbor, you know, why do we take food to a neighbor who's had a death? Because we grieve for them, we want to help them. But sometimes it's because all the other neighbors do it. I don't mean to be cruel, you know, but we have to check our motives.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that actually leads perfectly into this next slide. It comes up with this like three tiers of serving, these three levels. First, you have servitude, which forced act of serving another person. Okay, so this level of operation he's gonna use this illustration here on the right. So you have servitude, then you have service. It's a decided act of serving another person. So here you have the mind. So on the first one, it's forced upon you. Okay, you have no choice in the matter. You can kind of mentally, or not mentally, I'm sorry, you physically carry out what's being required, what's being asked of you. This is not of your own choosing. Service, you have decided, okay, I am going to do this. I'm going to serve. You have mentally made a decision. I'm going to make a meal, or, you know, I'm going to do this. And then he was saying that the third is servanthood. And this is an attitudinal, kind of funny word, act of serving another person. And this is where you get to spirit, or what you might put there is heart. This idea that it's something that kind of takes it beyond just a mental decision to really an outflow of your heart. Spirit works good too here, but I kind of think of it more as heart. this idea of servanthood is always there, ready to be called into action. Love acted out in life's relationship in a way that places the needs of others before one's own self-interest without exploiting oneself. Now, when I'm in the classroom, I'll tell you what I do right now. And this is not to... What I do right now when I have this slide up is I tell my class about Dale, honestly. And I always say, and he's not here today, so I won't embarrass him, but I always say, there is this guy named Dale in our church. And not to say that many others would not still fit this, but Dale, for some reason, just always comes to mind. And I talk about his tree service, and I talk about how, you know, he's here early on a work day. He's doing all, you know, how he's come to our house and taken down trees. And I just think he really embodies this for me in my mind. He's just kind of a quick illustration that I can give. And it's actually funny because when I was teaching this last semester, one of my students months later after we did this chapter, it comes up again in some way, and the guy, he's like, you mean Dale from your church. He remembered it, they remembered the story. But the reason I was saying that is I think we could all think of individuals that, you know, we may not even have an easy time defining exactly how this looks, but we have an easier time seeing it and identifying it and wanting to kind of emulate that. Dale's my go-to illustration for this slide. Yes.
I have another thing to say about Dale.
Go ahead.
I don't know if he still does, but I know he has visited people in detention, from the prison, and he just goes and plays cards with them.
I know. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not there to preach. He's not there to give them literature. He's there to play cards with them.
Yeah.
I think that's a good example of how he does it, how he serves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things that I remember we had gone initially. We danced there. And it wasn't until, I think, a year or two later that we even learned that he had continued going. And it's like, it was just this thing that he was doing. He wasn't getting attention for it. He was, you know. I'm really talking about people when they're not here today. Aaron, you missed it. You were the illustration for the first 10 minutes. But it had to do with the leash.
Can you put his head down?
You elaborate.
Yes. How you chose the high road.
outlet of conflict.
The return of the leash.
The return of the leash. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I mean that's such a thank you, Ron, for adding to that. But and what I have found is when I see this this attitude of servanthood in others, like I feel so compelled to want to be like that. And not for the idea of like, oh, then I can feel good about myself, but just like it's inspiring, you know? There's just something that is so inspiring about it. And in the same way that you can't make yourself be humble, you know, because then you can't set out to be humble, because then you're kind of, it's just really a little bit of hypocrisy. I feel like you can kind of come to this point and be like, okay, I'm going to make these decisions. I'm going to serve. I'm going to do this. But there's something almost supernatural that has to happen here. You know what I mean? There has to be a reality of God's influence in our life, in our heart, to take us from here to here, I think. And a surrendering of self, a dying to self. You can kind of put a number of different descriptions on it. But there's something that God has to do in our hearts to bring us, I think, to this point in our service to others. So, any thoughts? This is kind of a pretty good stopping point until next week, but if anybody had some follow-up thoughts they wanted to give, we can have a couple minutes further of discussion.
I think servanthood is something that's important to be lived out within the family. When I think of you know, I don't remember that being instilled in me as a child growing up much. So that it makes it a little more difficult to come into that then. On the other hand, Mike had a mom, Marilyn Shirley, who would have gone done anything for anyone. I mean, you could be a stranger on the street. And she said, yes, we have an extra bedroom. And he could rob them blind, but the next one that came along, she still took them in. And, you know, so she had, and she just stands out to me early on in the church. She had such an incredible servant's heart. It was like you couldn't have even separated it in her. That's who she was. That was Nero, the Lord, serving Luke. You know?
That's so true.
And so it makes it, when you see it before you, you understand it better.
Well, I think Mike is a good example of that. I mean, grown up under that, I think.
And I think it's something that you can't strive to do. Mm-hmm. And like with Mama, she just, that was her nature. And she just did it without thinking. It's not like, well, this verse, I'm going to be this verse. Oh, I should be more of a servant. Well, no, and Dale's the same way. And I kind of think you do a lot of work for the kingdom when you have that nature in you. Going back to Dale again, my daughter needed some tree work done, so I gave him Dale's number, and he came over, and it was like, she said, oh, he's such a nice guy, and she recognized or recommended him to other people. And it's like, that is, it's more like what Jesus is like than like what Ron was saying, handing out the nature, although there's good in that. She's had people come over and preach and point fingers, and you know, but people like Dale and Ron, those things for the kingdom that I wish I could be more like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very inspiring.
How? You just, that's a gifting, I guess.
I guess what I'm saying, that sounds so much like my mother. You know? When I grew up, I was as a teenager coming up. And I went to live with my mother. I was living with my father before that. I went to live with my mother. And I can remember the first Thanksgiving. And that was how my mother was throughout her entire life until she stopped doing it. But I remember my first Thanksgiving with her, and someone knocked on the door. And when I opened the door, and there was some of the neighborhood kids, one or two of the neighborhood kids that harassed me a lot. Okay, and they were at my door, so I was like, okay, what do these guys want? And then they said, yeah, man, it's Miss Ann there. They all called my mother. They said, it was like, Miss Ann there. And I said, my mother was like, yes. And then they said, can we get a plate, Miss Ann? And I was thinking to myself, I'll feed these guys. Miss Ann, guys, I'm going to ask every day. I'll feed them. Said, yo, why'd you come in here, get a plate? The plastic plates are over there, and get fixing something. And then I was thinking to myself, let me see what I'm going to put on this plate. I'm going to put a little bit of this, a little bit of that, say, here. But that's my way, that's what I was thinking of. And my mother made sure that plate was full. And I tell mom, hand that plate outside, we have plastic spoons and fork. And I kept thinking, I said, Mom, why are we feeding all these people? Because before all of that happened, we had Thanksgiving Day coming up. My mother was cooking a turkey, a ham, and something else. And I thought, hey, Mom, are we having guests? And she said, no. I thought, it's only four of us. Why are we cooking all this food? She said, because I have to, sir. I'm thinking, yeah, well, we have to cook all this food. But that's when I found out. That was why. Anyone who knocked on that door, it became well known throughout the projects. I lived in high-rise projects, 12-story buildings, 8 apartments, 42 rooms. And all throughout Thanksgiving and even Christmas, people knocked on the door and went something new. My mother said, make sure you feed. That's amazing. And so, you know, that's an amazing lesson to learn to the point where I'm at in adulthood. That is something I constantly practice. As a teacher, an administrator in school and so forth, I made sure all my kids ate and all my kids had clothes. I mean, it wasn't a common for Madge and I to go out, buy food, go to Goodwill, go to the store, get clothes for kids. We never gave up to, well, let me put that on my list of good deeds to do. It was just something to do. That's the spirit in us, go do it. That's the calling in us to go do it. And we never thought about, oh, but you know, she's crossing the car, I'm about to get a little money to go buy this kid a pair of sneakers. I did. And I never thought about how much it costs. I don't want a trophy. I don't want a pat on the back. The kid needed it. He did it.
Yeah, and it's the, you know, it's something of the attitude of your starting point. Your something changes. You know, something transforms from our kind of naturally selfishness, our natural kind of selfish nature to one of service. So I do hear the children in the hall, and I imagine the teachers are trying to corral them out there. So we'll just kind of wrap up right there. We'll pick up with this again next week. So if you have follow-up thoughts that you didn't get a chance to share, jot them in your notes. We'll definitely come back to this conversation. So, amen.